So this chapter is entitled Instructions for Civilized Human Beings. It'd be nice if I had a little more light here. Okay. The summary of the 15th chapter is as follows. In the previous chapter, Shri Nardamuni proved the importance of the Brahmana in society. Now in this chapter, he will show the differences between different grades of Brahmanas. Among the Brahmanas, some are householders and are mostly attached to fruitive activities or the betterment of social conditions. Above them, however, are the Brahmanas who are very much attracted by austerities and penances and who retire from family life. They are known as Vanaprasthas. That's good. Other Brahmanas are very much interested in studying the Vedas and explaining the purport of the Vedas to others. Such Brahmanas are called Brahmacharis. And so other Brahmanas are interested in different types of yoga, especially Bhakti Yoga and Jnana Yoga. Such Brahmanas are mostly sannyasis, members of the renounced order of life. As far as householders are concerned, they engage in different types of scriptural activities, especially in offering oblations to their forefathers and giving as charity to other Brahmanas the paraphernalia engaged in such sacrifices. Generally, the charity is given to sannyasis, Brahmanas in the renounced order of life. If such a sannyasi is not available, the charity is given to a Brahmana householder engaged in fruitive activities. One should not make very elaborate arrangements in performing the Shraddha ceremony of offering oblations to one's forefathers. The best process for the Shraddha ceremony is to distribute Bhagavad Prasad, remnants of food that have been first offered to Krishna, to all of one's forefathers and relatives. This makes a first-class Shraddha ceremony. In the Shraddha ceremony, there is no need to offer meat or eat meat. Unnecessary killing of animals must be avoided. Those who are in the lower grades of society prefer to perform sacrifices by killing animals, but one who's advanced in knowledge must avoid such unnecessary violence. Brahmanas should execute the regulative duties in worshipping Lord Vishnu. Those who are advanced in knowledge of religious principles must avoid five kinds of irreligion, known as Vidharma, Paradharma, Dharma Apasa, Upadharma, and Chaladharma. One must act according to the religious principles that suit his constitutional position. It is not that everyone must adhere to the same type of religion. A general principle is that a poor man should not unnecessarily endeavor for economic development. One who refrains from such endeavors, but who engages in devotional service, is most auspicious. One who is not satisfied with the mind must fall into degradation. One must conquer lusty desires, anger, greed, fear, lamentation, illusion, fright, unnecessary talks on material subjects, violence, the four miseries of material existence, and the three material qualities. That is the objective of human life. One who has no faith in the spiritual master, who is identical with Krishna, cannot get any benefit by reading Shastra. One should never consider the spiritual master an ordinary human being, even though the members of the spiritual master's family may think of him as such. Meditation and other processes of austerity are useful only if they help one advance in Krishna consciousness, towards Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, they are simply a waste of time and labor. For those who are not devotees, such meditation and austerity cause fall down. Every householder should be very careful because even though a householder may try to conquer the senses, he becomes a victim in the association of relatives and falls down. Thus, a grahastha must become a vanaprastha or sannyasi, live in a secluded place, and be satisfied with food gotten by begging door to door. He must chant the Omkara mantra, or Hey Krishna mantra, and in this way he will perceive transcendental bliss within himself. After taking sannyas, however, if one returns to grahastha life, he is called a vatamsi, which means one who eats his own vomit. Such a person is shameless. A householder should not give up ritualistic ceremonies, and a sannyasi should not live in society. If a sannyasi is agitated by the senses, he is a cheater influenced by the modes of passion and ignorance. When one assumes a role in goodness by starting philanthropic and altruistic activities, such activities become impediments on the path of devotional service. Quite a long introduction to the chapter. Just a summary. The best process, and we'll get into more detail as we go through the chapter, the best process for advancing in devotional service is to abide by the orders of the spiritual master, for only by his direction can one conquer the senses. Unless one is completely Krishna conscious, there is a chance of falling down. Of course, in performing ritualistic ceremonies and other fruitive activities, there are also many dangers at every moment. Fruitive activities have been divided into 12 portions. Because of performing fruitive activities, which are called the path of Dharma, one has to accept the cycle of birth and death. But when one takes the path of moksha or liberation, which is described in Bhagavad Gita as Archana Marg, one can get relief from the cycle of birth and death. The Vedas describe these two paths as Pitri Yana and Devayana. Those who follow the path of Pitri Yana and Devayana are never bewildered, even while in the material body. A monistic philosopher who gradually develops control of the senses understands that the objective of all the different ashrams, the statuses of life, is salvation. One must live and act according to Shastra. If one who is performing the Vedic ritualistic ceremonies becomes a devotee, even if he is a grahastha, he can receive the causeless mercy of Krishna. The objective of a devotee is to return home back to Godhead. Such a devotee, even though not performing ritualistic ceremonies, advances in spiritual consciousness by the supreme will of the personality of Godhead. One may actually become successful in spiritual consciousness by the mercy of devotees, or one may fall from spiritual consciousness by being disrespectful to devotees. In this regard, Narada Muni narrated the history of how he had fallen from the Gandharva kingdom, how he was born in the Shudra family, and how, by serving exalted brahmanas, he became the son of Lord Brahma and was reinstated in his transcendental position. After narrating all these stories, Narada Muni praised the mercy received from the Lord by the Pandavas. Maharaj Yudhisthira, after hearing from Narada, became ecstatic in love of Krishna, and then Narada Muni left that place and returned to his own place. Thus, Yukadeva Goswami, having described various descendants of the daughters of Daksha, ends the seventh canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. So it's quite a long chapter. Let's see how many pages. A lot of pages. It's about 100 pages, over 100 pages. Okay, so now we'll read text 1. Shinaru vacha karma nishta dvijaha kechit tapo nishta ripapare swadhyaye anye pravachane kechana jnana yugayoho shinaru vacha karma nishta dvija kechit tapo nishta and ripapare swadhyaye nye pravachane kechana jnana yoga yaho shrinara vacha karma nishta dvija kechit tapo nishtan ripapare swadhyaye nye pravachane kechana jnana yoga yoho shrinara vacha karma nishta dvija kechit tapo nishtan rivapare swadhyayenge prabhachane kechana jnana yoga yogo. Okay. Shinardo Bacha. Narada Muni said, Karmanishtaha, attached to ritualistic ceremonies. According to one's social status, as a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Shudra. Dvijaha, the twice born, especially the Brahmanas. Kechit, some. Tapa nishtaha, very much attached to austerities and penances. Nripa, O king. Apare, others. Swadhyaye, in stunning Vedic literature. Anye, others. Pravachane, delivering speeches on Vedic literature. Kechana, some. Jnana yoga yoho, in culturing knowledge and practicing bhakti yoga. The translation. Narada Muni continued, my dear king, some brahmanas are very much attached to fruitive activities, some are attached to austerities and penances, and still others study the Vedic literature. Whereas some, although very few, cultivate knowledge and practice different yogas, especially bhakti yoga. So there's no purport to this text. Next text has quite a lengthy purport, not too big, so we'll just continue reading and then we'll go on. Text 2. Jnana nishtaya dehani kavyan yannan chamichita vaivichata bhavishat aitarebhyo yatarhataha. A person desiring liberation for his forefathers or for himself should give charity to a brahmana who adheres to the impersonal monism, jnana nishtha. In the absence of such an advanced brahmana, charity may be given to a brahmana addicted to fruitive activities, karma kanda. So, Srila Prabhupada explains in his purport, Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. There are two processes by which to get free from material bondage. One involves jnana kanda and karma kanda, and the other involves upasana kanda. Vaishnavas never want to merge into the existence of the Supreme. Rather, they want to be everlastingly servants of the Lord to render loving service unto Him. In this verse, the words anantyam ichita refer to persons who desire to achieve liberation from material bondage and merge into the existence of the Lord. Devotees, however, whose objective is to associate personally with the Lord, have no desire to accept the activities of karma kanda or jnana kanda for pure devotional service, is above both karma kanda and jnana kanda. Anyabhilashita shunyam jnana karmana avritam. In pure devotional service, there is not even a pinch of jnana or karma. Consequently, when Vaishnavas distribute charity, they do not need to find a brahmana performing the activities of jnana kanda or karma kanda. The best example in this regard is provided by Advaita Goswami, who, after performing the Shuddha ceremony for his father, offered charity to Haridas Thakur. Although it was known to everyone that Haridas Thakur was born in a Mohammedan family, not a Brahmana family, and was not interested in the activities of jnana kanda or karma kanda. Charity, therefore, to be given to the first class transcendentalist or devotee because the Shastras recommend Muktanam api siddhanam narayana parayana sudurlava prashantatma kotishvapi mahamune. O great sage, among many millions who are liberated and perfect in knowledge of liberation, one may be a devotee of Lord Narayana or Krishna. Such devotees who are fully peaceful are extremely rare. This is from the Bhagavatam 6th Canto, 14th Chapter, Text 5. A Vaishnava is in a higher position than a Jnani, and therefore a Dvaitacharya selected Hariras Thakur to be the person to accept his charity. The Supreme Lord also says, Name Bhaktas Chaturvedi Mad Bhakta Swapacha Priyaha Tasmai Nayam Dato Grayam Sacha Pujo Yatayam. Even though a person is a very learned scholar of the Sanskrit Vedic literatures, he is not accepted as my devotee unless he is pure in devotional service. However, even though a person is born in a family of dog eaters, he is very dear to me if he is a pure devotee who has no motive to enjoy fruit of activity or mental speculation. Indeed, all respect should be given to him, and whatever he offers should be accepted. Such devotees are as worshipable as I am. That's from the Hari Bhakti Vilas, 10th chapter, 127th verse. Therefore, even if not born in a Brahmin family, a devotee, because of his devotion to the Lord, is above all kinds of Brahmanas, whether they be Karma Kandis or Jnana Kandis. In this regard, it may be mentioned that Brahmanas in Vrindavan, who are Karma Kandis and Jnana Kandis, sometimes decline to accept invitations to our temple, because our temple is known as the Angreji Temple, or the Anglican Temple. But in accordance with the evidence given in the Shastra and the example set by Dvaitacharya, we give prasad to devotees regardless of whether they come from India, Europe, or America. It is the conclusion of the Shastra that instead of feeding many Jnanakandi or Karmakandi Brahmanas, it is better to feed a pure devotee, a Vaishnava, regardless of where he comes from. This is also confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita in the 9th chapter, text 30. Abhichet surachuro vajate mamananyabhat sarureva samantavya samyagvyavastito hisaha. Even if one commits the most abominable actions, if he is engaged in devotional service, he is to be considered saintly because he is properly situated. Thus, it doesn't matter whether a devotee comes from a Brahmin family or a non-Brahmin family. If he is fully devoted to Krishna, he is a sadhu. Okay? So, Om Ganatim Randasha Gananjana Shabakya Chakshur and Miritam Yena Tasmai Shikurve Namaha. So you'll find this quite common in India, at least it used to be quite common, where the devotees coming from the Western world were discriminated against because they're coming from the Western world. And still today, you find this in Jagannath Puri. Of course, Jagannath Puri is the place where Lord Jagannath is. And they will not let Western devotees go in the temple. And they don't even let devotees whose families originally come from India, who live outside India, to go in the temple. So if any of you go to the Jagannath Puri temple, you have to just tell them you're from India or Bihar or someplace like that. And don't speak too much, because if they hear you're Hindi, they won't let you in the temple, because it's Fiji Hindi. So, therefore, this is simply bodily conscience. Like Prabhupada was in Jagannath Puri, and he made this very heavy statement that Lord Jagannath is not Purinath, he's Jagannath. I mean, he's the Lord of the universe. And Prabhupada even predicted, he said, unless they let the devotees in the temple, Lord Jagannath is going to come out and join us. And they get very ritualistic about all these different things. In fact, we know devotees have rathayatras all over the world, right? And the devotees, when they have rathayatras all over the world, they do it on different days. I mean, it's obvious. You can't do all the rathayatras all around the world on the same day that they do the Rath Yatra and Jagannath Puri. Does everybody understand the logic behind that? Especially Jagannath Puri, Rath Yatra is usually in July when it's very hot there, but it's very cold in Australia, so you couldn't do Rath Yatra in July in Australia. And also you want the devotees to go to all these different Rath Yatras. Just like recently, we had a Rath Yatra from where I came. I mean, I was here. I didn't get a chance to attend it. Anyway. So we had a Rath Yatra in North Carolina, and they sent me pictures, and it looked like it was very successful. Thousands and thousands and thousands of people attended Rath Yatra. And then when I go back to America, after I go to India, we'll have a Rath Yatra in Mexico. So there's Rath Yatras all over the world. So what happened is the pandas, who Prabhupada called, Prabhupada said the pandits are bandits. Prabhupada made a play on his word. Not all of them, of course. It's a pandit, bandit. You understand? You know what a bandit is? A bandit is a dacoit or whatever, a gunda. So the pandits actually went to court in India to try to stop us from doing Rath Yatra on different days because they thought that this was irreligious. And of course, they didn't have any case in court. It's not that they were able to stop us from having a Rath Yatra in Calcutta, a Rath Yatra in Delhi, a Rath Yatra, you know, all over India and all over the world by doing that. But that was their ritualistic consciousness, that you have to do things exactly the way, on the date that has been done for 10 million years. So we find that this particular ritualistic consciousness actually sometimes even holds up the spreading of Krishna consciousness within our society too. I mean, just like you see Srila Prabhupada, when he came to the Western world, he wasn't confined to the way his godbrothers or even the way the Gaudiya Math did things. What he did was that he adjusted things. And he had even ladies living in the ashram, giving ladies second initiation, do all sorts of things the Gaudiya Math never did, because he understood the essence of Krishna consciousness. Of course, that is the business of an acharya. It's not that, you know, we can make all sorts of adjustments, you know, that we can just change the regulative principles to three or two, just because people like Kava in Fiji. And we would fill the temple with devotees if we had Kava, isn't it? Like if we had a Sunday feast and we advertised Kava as part of the Sunday feast, we'd have to construct a new temple. We'd have so many people coming. So it's not that we can adjust those things. But an acharya can really, let's say, really stick his neck out and adjust a lot of things to attract people to Krishna consciousness. And Srila Bhakti Sananta Saraswati Thakur actually showed this to a very large extent. Not only was he, as we mentioned yesterday, initiating people who were born in non-Brahmin families, giving them sannyas and stuff like that, but he did things that were against certain Vedic injunctions, like he rode in a car. And not only did he ride in a car, but he rode in like a Rolls Royce or something like that, to Radhakund, just to shock the Babaji's and show people that, you know, ritualism is not where it's at. And he made such adjustments to try to preach. Even he, in Mayapur, when he was entertaining British people, he made adjustments so that they could eat meat if they wanted to. You know, so they would feel comfortable. There were some British dignitaries coming. And then even our Srila Prabhupada, when he first opened up the Bombay hotel, Juhu Beach, he arranged for a smoking room for people. Because people are so, not that they would smoke in the temple room, obviously you don't change things like that. But he arranged for the smoking room so that people who were so addicted to smoking, they'd have some place to go. So you see that's the Vaishnava. So somehow or other, he's interested in bringing people to Krishna consciousness. Like Prabhupada would give these points. Utility is the principle. Utility is the principle means that you really have, preaching is the essence, of course, books are the basis, purity is the force, those are the other principles. But you really have to strain your mind to figure out how to bring people to Krishna consciousness. It's not that you simply sit down and give Bhagavatam class, or you open up a temple. We were talking about this the other day, that you simply open up a temple and people will come naturally. You have to go out to people, you have to cultivate them, you have to use modern technology. Just like some people say that, oh, when Prabhupada never used the computer, so why should we use the computer? I remember when I was teaching Srila Gurudev how to use a computer. I was his computer guru. It's a whole line of disciplic succession from computers. Anyway, so I was his computer guru. I said, you have to learn how to use a computer. And at that time, there was the computer system in ISKCON was called COM, C-O-M. You understand? C-O-M? COM. Now it's called PAM-HO, right? And so I was telling him, you have to learn how to use COM. And he said, if I learn how to use COM, I won't be calm. You understand? COM, calm. COM means like peaceful, you know, it's a play on words. And I said, well, you have to do it. So, you know, I was explaining that to him, and then I taught him how, you know, I remember sitting down in a hotel room in Los Angeles somewhere. We were both attending the Rath Yatra. Forget which year it was. I mean, when you get old, you forget which year you did what. Because so many years went by. So we were sitting down in the hotel room, and I was saying, you push this button, you push that button. And then he learned how to use the computer. And then he utilized the computer quite a bit after that time in the service of Krishna. And then after that, you know, during the last few years, the computer, just an ordinary email and web pages have like become passe, you know, not so important anymore. And now they have the social networking sites like Facebook. You heard of Facebook? No, you don't know what that is. Anyway, something on the computer that you don't know about. So there's Facebook and Twitter and all those other things like that. Even I was speaking yesterday to the head information officer in the U.S. Embassy, and she was explaining to me that they don't even send out paper press releases anymore, right? They just go on Twitter and Facebook to do that. So the point I'm making, and I'm not trying to give a class about, you know, the electronic media and how wonderful it is, but the point I'm making is that a devotee should be ready to adjust the presentation, not be stuck because we did it a certain way 500 years ago, that we should keep doing it the same way. We need to even study sometimes other literature, you know, like literature on public relations. We have to study religion, literature on management, just like we have many of our devotees. We're becoming very expert in management, like Vishwanath Prabhu. He's very expert. I mean, he's practically managing the whole finances of the whole country now. That's why the country's doing so well, because of Vishwanath. Anyway, so we should take help. You know, sometimes we just like stuck, you know, we got to do it this way because we've done it for the last 10 years, 20 years since I joined the Hare Krishna movement. You know, like the management, for example. We're very much accustomed, in the past our management was very much hierarchical. You know, hierarchical? Hierarchical means that you got one big boss and two little boss, medium-sized bosses work under. And then you have four lower medium-sized bosses working under them, right? And then you have eight, you know, low medium bosses. And then, whatever, you know, you go down this whole organizational chart, and finally, you get the poor workers who don't have any say in their lives at all. They just, that's all right. They want to go to class. They're all lined up there on that. Pujalpa. Thank you. So you have this whole hierarchical system. So, I mean, that's the way we've done it for many years. But they, The point is that then you examine the structure and you think, oh, maybe some people are not feeling so encouraged, isn't it? People are not feeling, you know, there's a new word, empowered or encouraged. Because, and so I was just speaking to one of my disciples in Germany, and he's transforming his whole business. He's actually the largest manufacturer of health foods or health, supplements in Germany. And he's transforming his whole business so that people just, the authority structure is actually being divided amongst all the people who are working there. And what is that called? Somethingocracy, I forget. You should probably know what it is. Somethingocracy. Anyway, ocracy means like management, but I forget what it is right now. And how the business is becoming much more empowered because the people on the lower levels have a decision-making ability. Rather than waiting for someone, you know, just up on high to make all the decisions, and it'd be very inefficient. So many organizations are becoming like that. So the point is, I'm not trying to give a lecture on organizational structure in Kali Yuga, but the point is we should be ready to examine these things. If we want our movement to be ahead of the times, or at least up to the times, and able to present Krishna consciousness to others, we need to study, at least the leaders and devotees need, who are able and capable, and need to study these things, which I do, you know, like health things and all things like that. It's not that, I mean, just like, for example, I'm studying health a lot for my own benefit and for the benefit of the devotees. And you know, because you notice, like, many devotees are getting diabetes and cancer and heart disease. So you just wonder, you know, why is that happening? You know, what do we need to adjust? So we shouldn't, the point is we shouldn't be blind like ritualistic brahmanas. Like we were talking about this yesterday with a typical example that Prabhupada gives about the person who did a sacrifice and the cat tried to jump into the sacrifice and he tied the cat up. And then all of his disciples started to institute that as a ritual from then on. You know, all the time we should be examining. If we really want to spread the Krishna consciousness movement, we should be examining, maybe not of course the holy name, obviously. We're not going to change our chanting to Allah Akbar or something like that because we're preaching to the Muslim countries or we want to attract more people or Jesus loves you, you know. Open up the curtains. Jesus loves you, little children. You know, we don't want to do that, but you know, the basic process of Krishna consciousness remains the same. The chanting, the Mangalarti, you know, all these different things remain the same. But we really have to be open. We want to fulfill the Acharya's desires. What is the desire of the Acharya's? Tadvag visargo janataga viplavo yasmin pratislogama padavachapi namananantasha yasho nikataniyat shrinvanti gayanti sadavaha. That to create a revolution in the misdirected lives of an impious civilization. In other words, we want to change the world. That's our mission. I mean, and we've actually forgotten about that mission. When I first joined, of course, we were all young, and that mission was first and foremost in our minds. Change the world. You know, make Fiji completely Krishna conscious. Of course, that doesn't mean we force people, as Prabhupada said, to change their religion, but we make sure they follow their religion, and specifically they all chant the holy name of God in their own religion. That's fine. You know, chanting Allah, chanting Jesus Christ, whatever, or Yahweh, or whatever name of God that they have, or Prabhupada even mentions Om here, which is a name of God, Radha and Krishna, the living entities. So that should be our vision. You know, like Prabhupada said, shoot for the rhinoceros. That means you shoot for something really big. And that should be our focus. And Prabhupada also said, if you don't hit the rhinoceros, they'll say it couldn't be done anyway. And if you do, then you're the greatest hero on the earth planet. Because a rhinoceros means some big creature. You know, giant creature. So, with that in mind, we should strain our minds. Like Prabhupada actually said in the Upadeshamrita, that one who is, he defined Uttama Adhikari as one who is always thinking on how to spread the Krishna consciousness movement. That was Prabhupada. It's a functional definition of Uttama Adhikari. It's the definition that Prabhupada fulfilled. Of course, he was absorbed in Krishna internally and all those other things. But that's really what a great devotee in Kali Yuga means. One who is making plans somehow or other to spread Krishna consciousness. So that's what we should be doing, whether it's the management of the movement, whether it's the methodology of spreading or preaching Krishna consciousness, whether it's how to distribute books, whether it's how to go on the radio and preach on the radio. So we should be doing that in each country. It means adjusting things according to time, place, and circumstance. So anyway, so this is the point I wanted to make about this particular verse. And purport to any questions or comments. Then it's exciting. I mean, you have this mission in front of you all the time. Take over the world. Think about it. How many of us think like that? We just think, you know, oh, when's the next prasadam? You know, take over my family. Or take over my disciples, which is impossible. So what's that, Rupa Nuga?
Just reminds me of Srila Gurudev. Whenever he used to come to Fiji, often he used to say that we should have a mission in our lives.
Yeah.
If we have a mission, then we have something we walk towards. So I just was reminded about that. The second point that was that's coming into my mind is that, like, I see the Christian organization, their system of preaching, outreach program is very structured.
Yeah.
And I don't think so much our society, we don't have that of our structure program. And the particular aspect that I like to say, that's the opinion, is the Christian women, they have Bible schools.
Yeah.
And in Bible schools, they have like full-time students studying there for Bible.
Yeah.
And they are going to become future preachers there.
Yeah.
Pastors. So what about something like that in Fiji?
Well, eventually, yeah, we should set that up. And one of the reasons Gargamuni is here to actually after the ISKCON Disciple Course, to do the Bhakti Shastri with different people to set up some education. Right now, we don't have the resources to set up like a big educational institution like a Bible school. But yes, right now on the GBC level, we've actually set up a GBC school. I don't know if anyone's aware of that. Like previously, if one became a GBC like me or anyone else, it was you learn on the job. You know, the first time I became GBC, they said, okay, your GBC is here, here, and there. And I said, okay, what do I do? I said, yeah, whatever you feel like. You know, that's a great way to run a business. No training. You just stick someone out in the field. Okay, you know, so you go to the temple and say, hi, I'm the GBC. And then temple president says, what suggestions do you have? And the GBC says, I don't know. I just started my job today. But it's, you know, you learn on the job, you make plenty of mistakes, you burn out a lot of people, and then finally you learn how to be a GBC after 30 years. It'd be like running the revenue department here in the same way. Of course, a lot of people will become rich in the meantime. Especially in the old days, the tax collectors used to keep a portion of the money they collected. It was a good incentive. Maybe you should do that. Anyway, it won't work. And sometimes they kept too much, like Raghunath Das's father and uncle. Yeah, so eventually, right now we do have this GBC training school. We're just starting that every person who wants to become a GBC in the future is going to have to go through that training. You know, professional management, counseling, of course, spiritual training. It's a college. It's actually a GBC training college we have right now. And eventually all the people are going to want to take second initiation. You know, that's ministers or priests are going to have to go through maybe a 3 or 4 year course like that. So in the beginning we just did the needful, but after a while we have to set up these different systems. True. And the preaching should be systematized here in Fiji, but it takes time. It takes time. But at least the vision should be there. I mean, for example, I just went in not this time, but, you know, several years ago I went into FMF, you know, Flour Mills of Fiji place, and I was looking, they had their vision just like there, big letters in front of them. And I forget what the vision was. It's not really that important, you know, to make the best flour in Fiji or some stupid thing like that. But anyway, to be the most prominent. So we should have that too. You know, what do we want? Our vision. To have a vision, you have to be reminded of the vision. In your workplace, Vishwanath, do you have a visionary statement? What's your vision? Isn't that nice? So their vision is this year, you know, be the premier, you know, tax collectors.
And our mission is helping Fiji grow.
Helping Fiji grow. So, you know, so basically, you're reminded of that mission quite a bit, right? You know, so there's something called mission drift. You've heard of mission drift before? Where people start to get away from the mission into something else. And they got to be brought back into the mission. So our mission is to make Fiji Krishna conscious. I mean, of course, it would take some time to develop a mission statement or a vision statement. And the devotee should focus on that. And then be ready to adjust things accordingly and management strategies or whatever to accomplish that mission. Anyway, important points. So no stories today, just a little preaching. So... guess that's it. All glories to His Divine Grace. A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.